This is I Should Be Writing number 525. Again, it is an outlining show that I did on video, and the video is too large to upload. For the next 2 weeks, starting October 1st, 2020, you can see it on Twitch, twitch.tv/mightymur, and then otherwise I will try to find a place to put it for download. But we are outlining using the Save the Cat method.
Well, I should be writing.
I'm gonna go ahead and get started. Hey everybody. Wait a little bit for people to come in, but wanted to get started partly because since I changed over the software, there's a couple of things still missing, such as I haven't converted my countdown, little countdown widget over here, and I haven't done my art or music, and so before, when it was a countdown and had music going and everything, it was easy to sit through, but now it's like, I'm ready, so I will chat a little bit to see if anybody else shows up, but to let you guys know, I'm using my computer camera, and my computer's over here on the side, so I can work on my notebook, which is over here. And so when I'm working on the notebook, I'm going to be doing this a little bit. So not going to be, although I may be grabbing my own head. Sorry, that's too amusing. Hey, Snarky Moon, ready to save some cats. Remick Petra, good morning. Cheryl, good morning. Whirling Nerdish, hey. I hope y'all are doing well. I am, It's funny, I sat down with another project yesterday to go through the Save the Cat stuff, and it helped a lot, actually. And then I started putting the Six Wakes project into the Save the Cat thing in my head, and it's still daunting, but hopefully, even if I can't make it work for my project, that's probably my project's problem, and I still think it's a really good system. So, yeah, we've been going for 6 minutes. I'll get started. We got Save the Cat writes a novel. And this is the book we'll be going off of. And as I said before, this takes the screenwriting concept of the Save the Cat beat sheet and puts it into novel form. And what I like about it is the fact that they have, that this woman has taken a number of books and put them into the Save the Cat beat sheet. So it's like she really did her homework and just so much research, and not only just reading, but also fitting every one of these stories into the beat sheet. We have everything from In the Woods by Tana French, and then there were none by Agatha Christie, Girl on the Train, Emma by Jane Austen, The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini, Misery by Stephen King, Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. I mean, she just goes everywhere. And I like this. I've said the same thing about my favorite character book, which is 45 Master Characters, which is not only does it say, they give you some guidance on it, but it also tells you what, gives you lots of examples. And I think I work best with examples. So, you know, if you're not sure where you're, by her categories of genre, which I'm going to go into in a minute, if you're not sure which one your book fits into, then you can think about which one of these books is my book most like, and that may help you. This is the fancy camera, and it still can't fully focus. I'm very sorry about that. But first I'm going to go over the Save the Cat beat sheet sort of quickly. You can look this up online, I'm pretty sure, without having to buy anything, but this is what the whole thing hinges on, whether it's a screenplay or a novel. So Act 1 starts with the opening image, which is a brief snapshot of your hero in their world. And what they say is it needs to be similar to or a mirror of the closing image. Obviously, the last thing. So comparing the opening and closing images are supposed to show you how far the story has gone, how much the hero has changed, etc. Then the theme is stated, which is usually something like somebody says something, it doesn't have a lampshade hung on it or anything, but it's usually something that the character resists. And then the setup, which is basically, here's our story, here's our hero. I'm just going to use Star Wars to use it. This is the Luke at home shopping for droids, drinking that chalky stuff, and talking about power converters. That is the setup. We know who he is, we know where he is, we know this pastoral little life he's desperate to get out of. The catalyst, obviously, inciting incident. And then the debate of whether they should go or should not. Luke also has this when the droids appear to him. He meets Ben. He has the debate. The decision's made for him, obviously. But that's often a good thing because it shows your hero's reluctance to change when the decision's made for them. Punk, Junk, and Jazz, it's not clear, but it's more than good enough, can read everything. Okay, good. I'm glad. So then we have Act 2, and Break Into 2, which is not something that was terribly clear in Save the Cat, but I think the novel book puts it more clearly in that the world changes. This is Luke goes to Mos Eisley in the Millennium Falcon. This is Katniss goes to the capital city. This is Harry goes to Hogwarts. That's the Break Into 2, because the world is absolutely changing. The protagonist is out of their comfort zone. And this doesn't have to be, obviously it doesn't have to follow, like, a sci-fi fantasy world where you go from, you know, living in a hut to high-tech jetpacks. It's, you know, it can be obviously more subtle than that. And then we have the B story, which is when we get the new characters and possibly their stories. This could be helper characters, love interest, nemesis, mentor, family member, friend. This is probably when Princess Leia comes into play. Fun and games. This is that middle part of the book that everyone loves so much. Usually love reading it, don't love writing it. Where we see the hero in their new world. They're either loving it or hating it. So Luke has to deal with space battles and the Death Star and princess rescuing, and he's in over his head, and he loves it and he hates it a little bit, I'm pretty sure. Succeeding or floundering. Yep. Midpoint is the middle of the book, obviously, where the fun and games culminates in either a false victory or a false defeat. And, something happens here to raise the stakes and push the hero towards real change. And what was really interesting is I was listening to I guess it was last year, or maybe the year before, I was listening to this audiobook in my car, and my daughter became very interested in the whole Save the Cat method, and so I also have the physical book, as I just held up to you, and they say, after she read it, we would be watching something or listening to a book together in the car or something, and she'd be like, that's the false victory. That's the false defeat. It's one of those things that once you study this, you can spot these in your spot them in your media around you. So I guess that would be the rescuing the princess is a false victory, because it's like they did what they came here to do. They took the old man to Alderaan, not very well. And then they rescued the princess, losing stuff along the way. And then the bad guys close in. Well, that's obviously the Death Star. If the midpoint was a false victory, this section will be a downward path where things get progressively worse. If the midpoint was a false defeat, this section will be an upward path where things get progressively better for the hero. oftentimes in romance, this is where the false, you get a lot of false defeats where, well, the false victory would probably be sleeping with the, protagonist, the love interest. Or perhaps figuring out getting into a relationship with the one person in the triangle that they're not supposed to be with. There's a lot of ways to think about victory and defeat. The defeat is finding out that the guy that you've been chatting with for 125 pages is engaged. All is lost, lowest point of the novel. Pushes hero to rock bottom, that's usually pretty easy for everyone to spot. Dark Night of the Soul is the reaction B, where the hero takes time to process everything that's happened. Darkest Hour is where they fix this, find the solution, learn their lesson, etc. Act 3 is break into 3, which is the aha moment, which is where Inigo Montoya magically jumps up and starts fighting Count Rugen as if he hadn't just been stabbed horribly. Never understood that part. Finale, where bad guys are destroyed, flaws are conquered, lovers are reunited, and then the final image, which I mentioned earlier, which is, I think the opening image of Star Wars isn't technically the battle with Darth Vader. I think it's more the very simple lifestyle on Tatooine. Either Luke staring at the sun or the droids crash landing and being all alone. While the final image is all of those characters plus more with a found family pretty much and surrounded by people. So it's definitely a much less lonely, a much more important place, which is kind of the opposite of what the opening image was. So, those are the beats. And I'm not going to read this whole book to you because that would be weird, but you can see, if you get the book, you can see there's a lot more information in here, like percentages. Oh, hell, I can't do this. Okay, well, that is a graph of percentages of where in the novel stuff appears. Like, opening image is at 0%, midpoint is at 50%, break into 2 is at 20%, and these, while they're not set in stone, if they're not in the right place, readers will know and they will feel uncomfortable even if they don't know why. Because you have that expectation of things are going to get bad, things are going to get worse, things are going to get bad, things are going to get worse, or better, worse. And then, you know, whatever wonderful thing your heroes are having in the middle, you know it's going to go all to hell. And if it doesn't go all to hell in the middle, you're going to wonder, where are we going with this? Because the story's obviously not over. And I will say again that this is heavily a Western storytelling thing. I remember seeing the amazing, amazing animated movie. I highly recommend it. Your Name, the Japanese animation, and it's phenomenal, it's beautiful, it's touching, but near as I could tell, the climax is in the exact middle. And that's when I realized, it's like, you know, big stuff happens, and I'm like, wait, we've got like an hour left, what's gonna happen? And I realize it's not a Western storytelling. They're not using Western storytelling beats. That's not how they were doing the storytelling, and that's fine. But me, as a Western storytelling reader and writer, it flummoxed me. It really did. It felt very awkward. So, Sybil Rose, Love Your Name. Just watched it for the first time over the summer. Do you know what the middle point I'm talking about? It's the meteor shower, essentially. I pretty much thought that was a major climactic point. And it was definitely not in the last third of the movie. So then we get to the genres. Now here's where I had that mind-blown feeling, because nobody's ever described books to me in this way before. She says books fall into 10 different genres, and they all have their own rules. I'm not going to go over all the rules. I'll mention all the genres, and I'm going to go over the rules that I'm going to be mapping out here. But, yeah, Sybil Rose agrees with me. Cool. But I'll tell you that within the description of each genre, it tells you specific things that book has to do. So, number one is the Why Done It. It's a mystery. Must be solved by a hero. During which something shocking is revealed about the dark side of the human nature. Since this is the genre I'm going to be writing in, I'm going to leave this information here, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. Rites of passage. Hero must endure pain and torment brought about by life's common challenges. The examples are Emma, Anne of Green Gables, The Sky is Everywhere, The Kite Runner, The Shack, Summer I Turned Pretty, Room. Institutionalized. The hero enters or is already entrenched inside a certain group, institution, or establishment, or a family, and must make a choice to join, escape, or destroy it. And that is, the examples are The Help and The Handmaid's Tale. And others, but you know. Superhero. An extraordinary hero finds themselves in an ordinary world and must come to terms with being special or destined for greatness. Now, is that always a... Sorry. Yeah, that looks like mostly genre. We got The White Queen by Philippa Gregory, Cinder by Marissa Meyer, and Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Dude with a problem. An ordinary, innocent hero suddenly finds himself in the midst of extraordinary circumstances and must ride to the challenge. Now, this one was one of my favorite parts of the book because she uses misery as her description, and I love misery, so reading the breakdown of it was quite interesting. I think she also includes the Martian, The Hate U Give, and The Hunger Games. So I've read most of those, and The Firm by John Grisham. So, apparently I like Dude with a Problem stories a lot. Fool Triumphant. This is the underestimated underdog is pitted against some kind of establishment and proves a hidden worth to society. Princess Diaries, Bridget Jones' Diary, and Jane Eyre are the descriptions. Buddy love. A hero is transformed by meeting someone else, including but not limited to love stories, friendship stories, and pet stories. As I mentioned earlier, romance falls in this. And it was really interesting to broaden my idea of what a quote-unquote love story could be. The fact that they are comparing Because of Winn-Dixie, Pride and Prejudice, Eleanor and Park, The Fault in Our Stars, Me Before You, Twilight, The Notebook. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of different books in here, but they're all the transformative power of love or friendship. Out of the Bottle, that is the magic story. Ordinary hero is temporarily touched by magic, usually involving a wish fulfilled or a curse bestowed, and the hero learns an important lesson about appreciating and making the most of reality. And she only covers 20s Girl by Sophie Kinsella. Oh yes, here are the other ones. Christmas Carol, Picture of Dorian Gray, Mary Poppins, Freaky Friday, 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami, which is Japanese storytelling style, but she doesn't break down 1Q84, and I would be interested if she did. Golden Fleece, road trip of some sort to gain something. Quest, Heist, Ready Player One, The Grapes of Wrath. Now see, this is what I love. It's like, would you describe Ready Player One as comparable to The Grapes of Wrath? Not necessarily. But she makes it work in here. Monster in the House is number 10. Hero or group of heroes must overcome some kind of supernatural or real monster in an enclosed setting, and someone is usually responsible for bringing the monster into being. And that's Frankenstein, Prey by Michael Crichton, The Deep by Nick Cutter, and Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. So those are the 10. I'm just going to wait here. Does anybody have any questions they want me to cover to, as I said, I'm going to go over the why done it category. But if you have any questions about the ones I just mentioned, I'll be happy to answer them if you have any right now. And while you're thinking or typing or waiting for lag to catch up, I'm going to have some water. Hey, Annie, good to see you. Annie's giving us a penguin. I don't think Annie needs to learn any of the save the cat genres, but we have a penguin now. Yay. I like the penguin. Where is that from? Okay, so no questions. If you have any questions and you haven't gotten to it yet, let me know. And, it's Shafu emote. Did I say that right? It's Shafu? That's cute. I like it. So I'm covering the why done it. And, what's fascinating is she points out that what makes good mystery so compulsively readable is not the who, but the why. It's the reason behind the crime more than the criminal that captured our interest and keeps us turning pages. I just devoured the book One by One by Ruth Ware, I think. And I figured out whodunit pretty early on, but I kept reading it because I had no idea why. Is there a crossover between these categories? If so, how would you choose what is required? That is an excellent question, Lady Beard. I seem to remember something in here, but, I mean, there are crossovers. For example, I'm sorry, I really, really hate using J.K. Rowling, but Harry Potter is such a part of the consciousness, it's really easy to use for descriptions, so I apologize for using it, but bringing up Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, it's under the superhero being extraordinary in an ordinary world genre, but Harry Potter would not be the same without the very strong friendships included. So would you say that, you know, that was a buddy love story? There even is a little bit of romance in later books, that's also buddy love. So, I think you have to decide that the whole story is about being extraordinary in an ordinary world. And that is what you follow. But also, as you get into what the genres need, if you think about your book needs more of what buddy love requires than what the superhero genre requires, then you might want to turn to those story elements. And again, I'm not going to cover every single one, but I recommend it because this is what blew my mind when I was working on my latest mystery in the Why Done It, which is with the Why Done It, you'll need a detective, a secret, and a dark turn. The detective can be anyone, but two things must be true. They must be wholly unprepared for what they're getting into, regardless of job and or experience, and they must have a reason for being dragged into it. Why this hero for this plot? I think that I just realized that a lot of the detective-focused shows, like Miss Fisher and Marple and Poirot and Father Brown and everything, don't really fit this because they all seem to get involved because they're there. But I think in standalone detective stories, it's more important. You know, there's always there's some connection to the person's childhood, or there's some connection to their family or an ex-lover or something. It's not just, there's a dead person, you have to figure out who killed them. Does a why done it have to include the dark side of human nature? Asked Billy Boy. Sort of. Because the second thing it needs is a secret, You did not bold the secret. Why didn't she bold the secret? There's inconsistent use of bold here, people. Anyway, sorry, I'm finding it. Second ingredient, as the detective unravels clues, you, the author, continue to turn over the cards, the secret is revealed. This is why we search for the truth to begin with. What we find in the last dark room, not just the who and why, it's the what, where, and when. It's the what keeps people guessing. The secret often starts out small, but grows as the detective gets deeper. And this is a spoiler for Memory Man. I haven't read it, I haven't heard of it, so if this bothers you, I'm sorry, but, we learned that the same gun was fired at both the murder of the detective's family and the recent school shooting. But as the secret grows, we discover the murderer is actually targeting the detective and trying to send him a message through both homicides. I would have chosen a letter. And then there were none, which I have been listening to as I go to sleep because it's so comforting. One death turns to three deaths, turns to seven deaths. The plot and the secret thickens with each dead body, and that secret does not come up until the epilogue. Man, Agatha Christie just, like, made the rules and then broke them. That's pretty amazing. So the dark turn is the last part, and this is what really made a difference in my book, because usually rules must be broken, essentially. The detective decides that they're going to figure this out either without backup, without sharing the latest breakthrough, a huge violation of investigative rules. The rules broken can be moral, societal, or personal. It just shows, and what it does is it shows how this specific case has affected your detective. So those are what, taking the whole, breaking the rules, whether they're personal or whatever, was really influential to me. Another thing I got out of reading a How to Write Mystery book was that the detective has to solve the case, which sounds silly because it seems obvious, but sometimes you may want to put something else in there, like have somebody completely unexpected point out who killed them. That's not right. You should have the completely unexpected person point out a clue to the detective and let them make the leap, but it's not impressive if the detective does not do it. So recap, detective, professional, amateur, or even the reader, as in, and then there were none, the reader is actually the detective, needs to be somebody with a case on their hands, secret unravels the whole thing, illuminates something about the dark side of humanity, like Billy Boy mentioned. Something we didn't think was possible before the case begins. Dark turn is the moment when the hero detective finds himself so deep that their own rules, morals, or ethics are compromised. And popular whydunits, Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Rebecca, and Then There Were None, Along Came a Spider, Da Vinci Code, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Girl on the Train, In a Dark, Dark Wood by Ruth Ware. I just read her new book. So, that is the why done it. Another question. Could the why done it for series be the long-term mystery like Miss Fisher's Sister? Interesting. Yeah, that might work, I think. That's a good point. That was a mystery that didn't... Yeah, that she was always looking for. Good point. But, oftentimes there's not just someone got mad at somebody and killed them. They got mad at them because they won the... And not even because they were jealous that someone beat them in a competition. It's more of they were also going to sell the winery after they won the competition or give the community center over to the city or something. I'm getting into Breaking 2, which I do not want to know the beat sheet for. But, so now we have the beat sheet idea. I'm starting to regret this whole plan of trying to live outline something, so I really hope you guys get something out of this, because I do have the fear it's going to be falling apart around me, but we're trying something new, right? So we have opening scene. Thing is, last night in the car, I was thinking, do I want... I don't know if I've decided who the protagonist is of this story. Because I've toyed with having the human tech be the protagonist. The popular choice is probably the characters everyone knows and loves to be the protagonists. Or the antagonist from the first book become the protagonist of the second book. So. Yeah, so the opening image, I'm not exactly sure. Because that's, I shouldn't be saying this. I should be completely sure of myself, right? If I were completely sure of myself, you would know this is the wrong podcast. Yeah. So let's just... I just gotta choose something. It may not turn out this way, but I'm gonna try it. So we're gonna try the... let's make the human. Let's make the plain old human tech the protagonist. Getting way, way, way in over her head. And the opening image is there are riots on Earth, and they know where the shuttles to the space station, they know where they take off from, and they're being bombarded by the riots. And this woman's just trying to go to her job. I wonder if having my hand there makes it focus wrong. I don't know. Anyway, so we have, give me a name for somebody. I need a name. I'm gonna leave space for the name. We got Wendell and Winifred. I'm gonna say Winnie. Sure. So we have Winnie struggling to get on the shuttle amid chaos. She's frightened and in the it's just my job mentality. She does not believe in, like, the ethics. She doesn't care about the ethics of the clones. She basically got a really, really good paying job. It's boring, and it's definitely not as glamorous as everybody else thinks it is, because she basically has to stay in her tech room because she can't go wander the amazingness of the space station. But it pays really well, and her plan is to just do her job for a couple of years and then try to retire or move into a better place. Anyway, she wants to make a lot of money and then quit. That's her goal here. She's not worried about all the clone stuff going on Earth, and she just wants to get on board. And that's all she cares about. So, theme stated. Now, this one is an interesting... part, sorry. I was looking for the description, the examples of the theme stated. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Someone, usually not the hero, will make a statement or pose a question, like, maybe all men got one big soul everybody's a part of, from Grapes of Wrath. Or, Mom is always saying I'm a smart kid, but I just don't apply myself, by Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And the thing is, they usually reject this. Pride and Prejudice is particularly clever in being pointed out as saying, pride is a very common failing, I believe, and then she explains why pride is found in all of us and therefore should not be judged too harshly. So the theme is, The problem with stating the theme is it always feels very trite, and most themes feel trite until they're described or played out. But I'm going to go with one person can change the world. Probably going to have this on some sort of motivational ad or post. Thank you, Kay Kimmy. Embrace the trite. Probably going to have it on some sort of motivational ad or something. And basically she's like, I'm just a tech. I'm an ant among giants. I'm just trying to do my job and disappear. I'm not worth anything. And what's interesting is now that I've given her a theme and a mentality, I'm feeling the rest of the book have more, it's solidifying a little bit more in my mind, knowing what the theme has to be and what she must do to embrace the theme. So now we have the setup. We've already done a little bit with the opening image, but we're just going to do travel to station. Exposition on her life. Arrival to station. And the arrival to station is going to be showing that it's really, really not as glamorous as everybody thinks it is. That her life is actually pretty boring and not, you know, something she would like to get out of. But the money's just too good. But the Why Done It beat sheet in here is Girl on the Train. Again, spoilers, if you care. In the setup, she says, Paula Hawkins effectively introduces Rachel's things that need fixing. Right. Things that need fixing. That's what it's got to have. So I'm going to put things that need fixing. And that's Rachel's an alcoholic who drinks and blacks out way too much. She lives in a fantasy world. She does headcanons of people she sees outside the window of the train. She can't get over her ex. She has frequent blackouts where she calls her ex. Her roommate is losing patience with her. And she's already lost her job because of the drinking. So that's just in the first 12% of the novel. So yeah, describing what's not good about the person and her life goes in that part. So we have four. Catalyst. The catalyst is when the clones from 25 light years away arrive. As well as, yes, it's a coincidence, I don't care. As well as the, there are a number of unauthorized mind maps coming through to the, lab. So, unauthorized. And she allows it. Don't know if it's because of boredom and she just wants something interesting, or because she doesn't really think that anybody could mess up the station if these are completely unauthorized, terrible people. The first, the oldest clones will shut them down, no problem. So maybe she just wants some interest. Maybe she believes in their plight. I know some of the clones come with a letter. So then there's debate. Yes, I put That one without a circle and that one with a circle. This means nothing. So the big debate question is, I guess, what do these clones want? Or what's happening on Earth? Yeah, because that's the problem. What's happening on Earth? What's happening via the clone virus? The other clones showing up is actually a wrinkle in a number of plans. How or if to help? And the break-in two is when they're all thrown into the animal reserve. For the game. I didn't even put it up here. Sorry, break-in two. So, what this is doing is, we've got the whole setup here, and we've got everything changes here. Everything. I mean, even the setting changes, the people she's with, the people she can trust, that's all changing. The stakes are changing. Everything is very different than they were before. And I was thinking, I know I told you I had an off weekend and I didn't do much, but I actually have been thinking of a lot about this all week. And I realized one thing I've never heard anybody talk about is the first third of the novel. I sort of see it as building the foundation of your main character. And then building up the foundation of your main character. And once the first catalyst happens, break-in two, that starts to crumble. And it just keeps crumbling. So, like in most murder mysteries, it would be the first murder happens. And everybody's suddenly, like, hyper-aware and, you know, was that an accident? Was it murder? What's going on? And then, so, everything they know and trust is starting to crumble. Seven B story. I think we're gonna have, she gets to know her companions. And their motivations. And grudges. So they're, because, you know, the people from the Dormire, they're going to want to kill the other person, but they know that just killing her is not going to do anything if there's any chance she can be recloned. So while it would feel good to kill her right now, it won't necessarily fix anything, and, well, she is kind of a criminal mastermind and might help them get through this. And as for her, well, she's got an awful lot of her own secrets about why the clones on the station hate her. She's got her own motivations, why she wants to save the day. Saving the day is really not something she is used to doing, but now she's in the position she has to. So, 8, fun and games. Now here's where I do the, and then a battle happens, because we're just going to be doing survival. In the reserve. So, I think Fun and Games is a little weird of a title, because it's like, it implies, well, fun and games. Which, in Harry Potter, is almost literal, because there's Quidditch matches, and there's the Halloween party with the ghosts, and there's the troll in the bathroom, and it's all very exciting, and with Star Wars, that's the whole Death Star is pretty much the fun and games part. And, for Girl on the Train, she says, Rachel has started to research the disappearance of one of the women she spies on from the train. And she actually stops drinking. She's interested in something for the first time. And that's leading her up to, since that's an upward path, that's leading her up to a false victory. So I think, trust established. Notice I'm not naming any names here because I'm not exactly sure what will be established, who's going to trust whom, all that stuff. But it's all of this happening makes people start trusting each other. The 9 midpoint. They get out. I don't know if they find... I keep thinking of Portal 2. I don't know if anybody's ever played that, but it's... Portal's a very bizarre game where you're kept hostage by a mad computer who just wants to put you through many, many tests of the portal gun, which opens portals. And as you go through on Portal 1, you discover that the computer's actually quite homicidal, and there's something very wrong. And in 2, you get woken up from a stasis and thrown back into testing. But you find, like, a literal crack in the wall, and you're able to get out of the testing, and you still have your portal gun, and then you have to wander around with your portal gun, figure out the mystery of what's going on, and find your way out. So I keep thinking of, like, the crack in the wall there, and these characters finding that and getting out. And so now they're free on the station. False victory. But like so many false victory midpoints, something bigger's coming. A tiny bomb is waiting to explode and send the story and us in a new direction. As is so often in the case of Why Done It's, the midpoint we think we know what this case is about. We may even know who done it, but we don't. The midpoint twist will prove that it's much bigger than we thought. So, during all of this, remember, the trust established, the inter-character relationships, it's going to be revealed to the Dormeyer people what's been going on the Earth for the past 25 years. We're going to find out more about this specific clone of the killer. And the human is just way in over her head. And what's funny about this system over the previous system, the Snowflake Method, is the Snowflake Method does the three disasters thing, which kind of works. But I think I prefer this because I don't have to think specifically of the disaster. I could just think of things that build up to something crumbling. So, like, the midpoint is not usually a disaster or a full disaster, but it's still a very important part of the book. The midpoint is when the woman's psychiatrist, I think, is arrested and evidence is found that point to him about the disappearance of the woman. So the stakes are raised when he's released without being charged and her body's found buried in the woods. This is a murder and our prime suspect just got away. So I believe also the stuff that comes out is the killer's relationships with the clones aboard the space station and who they are. But they were still nebulous people by now. So whatever we think about them will be what a manipulative killer has told us about them. Are we going to believe it or not? So, bad guys close in. I can write. You guys can read this, right? Yes, okay, good. Oh, new follower! Thank you for following Ms. Permission Slip. I like that name. That's cute. Yeah, so we got bad guys close in. So, and the girl on the train, she's reacting to her false victory. Stakes are raised, so she starts drinking again. And the thing is, what's also not described in detail here that I really find helpful in figuring out a book is establishing a character's wants and needs, because I feel like when they get to the end, when they get to the Dark Night of the Soul part, that's when they realize to stop going after what they want and start going after what they need. And they may not even have a reason behind it, but... Oh, no. Sorry, the opposite. They may not have a plan, but they do have a reason behind the new path. Because they stop going for what they want, and they start going for what they need. Throughout all this, our character, Winnie, is thinking, you know, if I get out of this, I'm definitely losing my job. These people aren't going to give me a reference. I mean, she's still thinking, like, very... small and very much about herself. She's not thinking about the clones on Earth. She's not thinking about the people she's with. The clones are like, this is like a maid getting caught on an adventure with a bunch of prince fox hunters. It's like, these people are very different from her. And she can't even like figure out the concept of helping them much beyond, you know, basic things. So, she has to figure out our theme. Our theme stated that one person can change the world, and she has to figure out that her needs, etc., are as important as everybody else's. So what they're going to be doing is finding first clones to talk to, appeal to, and finding no sympathy. I think it's possible there's going to be somebody in their group. Like, I'm not even quite sure who's in this group. Because, like I said, I need more murder suspects. There are mass murders going on the Earth. And that's what we're here to solve. But I think we need more suspects, which include people from Earth and some people on the space station. But, I believe there's a, they split here. They finally split the party. Because they no longer need the same thing or want the same thing. As you can tell, my brain works so much better with this method than with the snowflake method. Because even if the book doesn't go this way, I'm still not horribly floundering. Bad guys are closing in. All is lost. So the girl on the train I believe she... Sorry, I'm catching up. I haven't read it in a long time. I think I read it when it came out and that was it. Oh, that's it. She knows the, her ex-husband, threatens to kill her, locks her in a spare bedroom. I'm not sure if they've figured out that he's the killer or not. He's the killer. But, I think you lose, trust is broken. Trust is broken, or people die. So, like, either something real, like, something real is lost, like death, or something intangible is lost, like trust or love. So Dark Night of the Soul is usually when, Rock Bottom. I forgot to put Dark Night of the Soul. I'm just gonna say when character... What she needs... I think what she needs is to make a difference, which she doesn't believe she can do because she's just a human who had to drop out of nursing school. I didn't mention that part, but that is part of her backstory. No, not needs to feel, needs to make a difference. And then she has to think of how she can do that. So now we have Act 3. Oh wait, no, I'm missing the for the girl on the train, I'm missing the names of people. It's not her ex-husband who threatens to kill her and locks her in a room. It's somebody else. Under Pope, I have to drop out, but thanks for the video. We'll catch up with the remainder later. I'm so glad it's helping. I do want to tell people that these are turning out to be much longer than the internet likes you to put video, to make for video, and YouTube will not accept me putting this up, so this video will only be available for 2 weeks on Twitch. So that's twitch.tv/mightymurr/videos, and today is October the 1st. Hello, OK Cunning. You've come in at Act 3 of our outline. But we're still delighted to have you. So break into 3 is figure stuff out, pretty much. In Star Wars, that's... We still got to go after the Death Star. I think in Harry Potter, that's the we have to go after the Sorcerer's Stone ourselves. Things like that. So, and it often alone for the protagonist. So the finale. Truck Poetry, hey! Hoping to watch but have to catch the replay. Thanks for doing this. You're welcome! Really helpful I have this book, but it's nice to see how to apply it. Oh, I'm so glad you guys are finding this helpful. It really... Because actually it's helping me. I know a lot of these are very vague. It sounds very vague what I'm going to do, but it's very vague in my head. This is actually a lot more than I usually get. And figure stuff out like murderer. At 14 we have the finale. Now, If you guys really want me to, I can go over this on another podcast, but she actually breaks the finale into 5 parts. So there's 5 parts within the actual finale to properly make it as poignant as possible. And I'm not going to break it into this, partly because I don't know enough about my own book to know exactly the details of how the finale will happen. But the names are Gathering the Team, which is you're often alone here, but you gather the team. I realize this would be where they go after the Sorcerer's Stone in Harry Potter. Again, for a pantser, isn't vague a good thing? Yeah, I think so. I don't know if it's good. I know it's necessary. I know it's likely. So gathering the team, whoever you split with in previous points, you get all back together. Executing the plan. That's pretty obvious. I believe that would be everybody gets back together, they gather all the X-Wings, executing the plan, they start the run on the Death Star. High Tower Surprise. And that's when something goes wrong. That's when the X-Wings start getting shot out of the sky by the Death Star. Point 4, dig deep down. Luke, use the Force. And point 5, execution of the new plan. So dig deep down is figuring out a new plan that will save us all. So I believe this is when Harry just grabs Quirrell and the touch is what takes him down or something. I don't remember. And the execution of the new plan fixes everything. And now we have... I'm just gonna put battle. Because I'm not... There's lots of different kinds of battling here. But then the final image... is going to be her... taking the shuttle with survivors. That's spelled right, trust me. Amid chaos. So as we started out with the opening image, is she's leaving on the shuttle and just figuring, I'm just doing my job, just leave me alone, I don't care about what everybody else is mad about, etc. And now she's actively taking the shuttle and rescuing them and taking them to Earth from the station. So that's how I've chosen to mirror that idea. That's why it took me a second to get the opening image, because I wasn't sure what the closing image was going to be. So we have the Why Done It, which is our detective. That's our human, Winnie. She is definitely amateur. Definitely. The secret. That has to do with the reason behind the clone virus. And probably something about the... I think there's mail here. Or something. Sorry about that. But the secret has to do with the virus. The secret has to do with something about the killer, Sally. I'm still not entirely sure her... whole thing. And then it's got the Dark Turn, where they're gonna have to... Don't know that one either, I'll just say. Something is there, and the trust is lost, and the people die, and she figures out how she's going to have to fix this. The Dark Turn in The Girl on the Train is when the protagonist sleeps with the husband who's wife is missing and murdered. It's the moment when her obsession with the case overpowers her ethics. Now see, before I had in my mind that they had to bend the rules in order to solve the case, but apparently it also includes just screwing something up, doing something unethical, etc. So, that is roughly the novel in Save the Cat Writes a Novel. Cheryl says, I bounced off hard the original Save the Cat and didn't react better to Wright's novel. Seeing a real-time example makes me think I should go back and try it one more time. If you want, as I proved very well on Tuesday, not every outlining format is going to work, which is why I wanted to go over three. Thank you for following Computational Mama. Good to see you. Welcome. And just want to say again, welcome to everybody lurking. You don't have to speak up, but I am so glad you're here. So yeah, that is Save the Cat. As you know, things got vaguer and vaguer as I went along, because I'm a pantser and I can't tell you what these specifics will be. But I have a beat of ideas. Well, that's why it's called a beat sheet. I've got the ideas down to, I'm going to try to get to this point in the story and get to this point in the story and get to this point in the story. So this one might actually help me. We'll see how the story grid goes on Tuesday. So do you guys have any questions? As you can tell, this is probably my favorite method. And I highly recommend this book because it's got so much more stuff in it than I went through, because I'm not going to read the book to you because that's a copyright violation and boring. But, yeah, just, it works for me. And I think I was thinking about the snowflake method and I think somebody said this on Tuesday, that the snowflake method is useful if writing the plot over and over again cements it in your mind and helps you work out little things that might be broken, which is true. Ooh, Christian Writing Heads Up book was $1.99 on Kindle a couple of days ago and may still be. That is awesome. Thank you for letting us know. So if you guys don't have any questions, I will start my endspiel. If you have any questions, please ask me and I'll stop my endspiel to answer. Because I never know how much lag is here. So I like to say, do you have any questions? And then don't know how long to wait. So, awkwardness on my part. This is I Should Be Writing number 2... No. I know there's a 2 in there somewhere. 525. And it's October 1st. I am Mer Lafferty. You can find out more about this show at merverse.com or twitch.tv/mightymer. You can support the podcast by subscribing at twitch.tv/mightymer. Or you can support the Patreon at patreon.com/mightymer. If you have any questions for me, you can ask them in the chat right now, or you can email me, mightymer@gmail.com. And I have no sponsorship with Save the Cat. I just really, really like it. It works very well for me. So I'm not... this is not a paid endorsement of any kind. Although if I do put the link to Save the Cat in the show notes, it'll probably be affiliate, but I'll make it clear there too. And, yeah, I think that's it for me. Thank you guys so much for coming and hanging out and, letting me draw and scribble. Okay, Kimmy, finish the Halloween journal! I want to see a picture. Can I see a picture? Can you send me... you can't post it in the chat, but... email me at mightymer or like poke me on Twitter. That's mightymer as well. So mightymer@gmail.com. I'd love to see it. Yeah, I guess that's it for me. I've been talking for over an hour. I hope this has helped. And if it hasn't, then maybe story grid method, which I'll do next Tuesday, will help. So Tuesday at 12:30. Hope to see you guys again. Thank you very much. Did I say you should be writing? Because you should.
Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Emilio. You can find more about him at johnemilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.